This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Felix Is has an unusual problem. When he was very young, an experiment his father was conducting went wrong, and Felix became fused with a friendly, quirky alien from the fourth dimension named Zix. Now a teenager, Felix is counting the days before the procedure that will either separate him from Zix or kill him. And as if Felix didn't have enough to worry about, he's also struggling with feelings for Hector, a boy at school. This is the premise of the debut young adult novel by Exeter author Lisa Bunker, who joins me now to talk about Felix Is. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Peter. I'm glad to be here.
So this book has a lot of facets to it. You've got science, you've got sexuality and gender identity. You've got a teenager trying to figure out what's important in life and who he is. We'll get to all of that. There's so much to discuss. But first, let's talk about Felix's name. His name is the first thing you encounter, Felix, and it's pronounced Is, but it's spelled Y-Z. What's the story behind that last name?
It's a geeky thing. There's this fourth dimensional being in the story, and I wanted to play around with a math thing having to do with that. So Felix's last name ends with the letters XYZ, or his full name, if you spell it all out as a string of characters, ends with XYZ, which can be seen as the three axes in a three-dimensional graph of space. And then Zix is a fourth dimensional being. And so there's a really geeky thing that happens in the story where Zix gets a 27th letter of the alphabet. Felix's grandparent invents it. Felix's grandparent is a word geek. And so we have this 27th letter spelled with an asterisk pronounced. And that's Zix's full name is actually Zixalef. Let me try that again. Zixalef. And so that's the fourth dimension, a 27th letter to be the fourth dimension. This book is full of geekeries, math, chess, classical music, jazz, philosophy, ideas of the infinite versus the finite and the infinitely permeable barrier between the two.
So the alien from the fourth dimension, Zix, with the 27th letter of the alphabet, which sounds like a...
That was good.
Yeah, thank you very much. I've been practicing, trying my best. How did you find Zix's voice? Because he's a lovely character. He speaks through typing. This whole novel is for the most part, Felix typing in his blog. And Zix, this fourth dimensional alien, has the power to take over Felix's fingers and speak in his own way, usually in italicized language. How did you find inspiration for that?
Not only italicized, all lowercase, no punctuation, sort of E.E. Cummings-esque. Another thing that I like to do in my writing is examine tired old conventional tropes and see how they could be done differently. And so I started thinking about an alien inside a long, long time ago. This was an idea I had for stories when I was a teenager. I sort of thought, what superpowers would it give you then? I was more interested in that sort of stuff then. But now I was thinking, when I was writing this in my 40s, I was thinking more about what would it be like to have a radically different intelligence inside you, one perhaps that you're going to have to say goodbye to soon. And then I started thinking aliens. All right, what do we know about aliens? They have oval heads and you know, almond-shaped eyes, and they land in Area 51, and they come in peace. And those are the conventional alien tropes, and I wanted to invent something completely different from that. And so my concept of Zix is as a kind of entity who, before becoming fused with Felix, had no physical corporeal being, who had no relationship with language of any kind, and who had no sense of individual self apart from a larger collective self or being or group consciousness. In other words, just about as completely alien from a human as could possibly be. And a big part of the backstory of Felix is Felix and Zix learning to cohabitate the same body, and Zix learning what language is and how to use it to the limited extent that Vo does. So yeah, it was like, how completely alien could we make such a person? And then just for the fun of it, I gave Zix a kind of combination of deep philosophical insight and childlike geeky joy about things like chess and music, just because it was fun.
Chess pretty, jazz pretty.
Jazz pretty, yes.
Yeah, and forgive me, I keep referring to Zix as he, and that's an involuntary tic, and it's actually not accurate. I mean, you just referenced the pronoun Vo.
Yes.
To refer to Zix. This is a thing you're using for those characters in this book that don't conform to the gender norms that have traditionally been used. Another character is Grandy, Felix's paternal grandparent, who certain days of the week is Vern and other days of the week is Vera. This is an interesting aspect of the book because it's in the background. It's there. It's part of Felix's identity, his family identity, but it doesn't necessarily take center stage. I wondered if this was something that hit close to you or was personally inspired by something, because you are a transgender woman.
Yes.
Was this part of the book particularly meaningful to you?
Well, it was deliberate. I could say I have a couple of different missions as a writer relating to my own identity as a trans person. One is, I do not think there are yet enough books in the world for kids or adults or anyone featuring LGBTQ characters without that being the preachy point of the book. There's a goodly number of stories now about being gay in high school or being queer in high school or being trans in high school or whatever it might be. But often, I'm not going to say always, but often those books are about that. And I wanted to write a story about a kid who is fused with an alien and who also, incidentally, among other interesting personality facets, is attracted to another boy at school. And it is, as you say, not the important part of what's going on with Felix. It is just one facet among many. As I would say, my status as a transgender person is one facet among many of who I am. Of course, it matters. It has had a big impact on my life and the arc of my life, but it doesn't define me. You can't say, oh, Lisa Bunker, she's trans, and have that explain me any more than my faith or my nationality or, you know, how tall I am or the color of my eyes or anything else. So yes, writing stories featuring LGBTQ characters without that being the main point and without shaking a finger and lecturing at the reader or anybody else, just a thing about Felix. And his grandparent is genderqueer and his mother is bisexual, and there's a couple of other LGBTQ characters as well in the story. And then there's a second sort of sense of mission related to the first that has developed more recently, because I, of course, am tracking response to Felix online and reading reviews by readers. And one comment that I tend to get from some readers is, there are so many LGBTQ characters in this book, it's not realistic, or it strains credulity, which I think is an amusing thing to say about a book about a boy fused with an alien.
What do you think people expect?
Well, I think those reviews come perhaps from readers who, for whatever reason, have not had or do not realize that they have a fair number of LGBTQ people in their lives. And perhaps they are used to a kind of convention in our contemporary literary and film world and television world that in a story there might be one or two LGBTQ characters, but no more than that. A kind of sort of unspoken statutory limit on the on the representation there. And I know from my own experience that, in fact, there are spaces and places in our world which are almost completely queer people. We find each other. We are a misunderstood and often vilified set of minorities. And so we seek solace and strength in community, and there are communal spaces in real life and online, and there are families of choice and group houses and all kinds of other ways that LGBTQ people come together, and we have culture. And so a second sense of a mission has evolved around depicting that in stories, still without it being the preachy point, but I want to show a family like my own family in which the majority of the members have one of those letters, an LGBTQ or more. For my family, my little family of three, myself and my two children, well, and my partner too. So I am a transgender woman. I am engaged to be married to another woman.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I have two children, one of whom is genderqueer, as we say, doesn't identify as either male or female and uses the pronouns they and them. And then I have my son, who is, in that grouping of four, the only conventionally cisgender heterosexual person, our token straight kid. So there are, in fact, families where almost everybody is LGBTQ in some way, and I want to show that to the world. And by extension, the the friend groups, the communal gatherings that happen, the focal points where people find each other and draw strength and solidarity from each other.
For me, in this book, the gender identity, the characters like Grandy and to a certain extent Zix, were part of a bigger puzzle that, when put together, is a statement about identity, it seemed. And totally, like, correct me if this was not your intent, but it seemed like if it were to be making a point, it would be a point that says that identities change, and your feelings about yourself and who you are change as you get older. Grandy seemed to change according to what day of the week it was. And of course, Felix was going to go through a huge change. He was going to have Zix removed, and that would in some ways remove his, ability to play chess as well. And he was going to have to grapple with the kind of person he was going to be after this procedure. Not making a judgment of any kind on change, but seems to be a statement about how change is normal and change happens.
Yes. I wouldn't say that I set out with exactly what you just described clearly in mind as a goal for the book. But, you know, now that this book exists as a physical object in the world and I'm having to write little things on the flyleaf, one of the things I'm writing is reader, comma, book, comma, writer. It's a threeness. So there's this other concept that passes through the book of the threeness of things and how there's a thing in the middle between two other things. And so whatever my intentions were, if you took that away from the book, you brought what you brought to the book and you read it and that happened for you, wonderful. That makes me happy. What I would say I was thinking about more writing sort of the inevitable change that Felix has to go through. So he's counting down to a procedure to separate him from Zix, because being fused together is not healthy for either of them. So either he's going to lose this sort of unusual secret friend that he's had all his life and who he loves, or he's going to die, and which is a lot to put on any 13-year-old. And it's a very fraught time as he counts down. To me, what I was most interested in was I passed through significant grief at a young age. My father died when I was 14. And one of the things I noticed, even as I was being sort of helplessly tumbled over in the tsunami of that and the grief of it and just the overwhelm, was regular life kept happening. You know, I still had to go to school and brush my teeth, and the cat pan needed to be scooped. And, you know, just even when these sort of earth-shattering things are happening, real life just keeps going on. And that was something that I was interested in writing this story, was here's a kid counting down to this unimaginable procedure with no perfectly happy outcome. Massive change is about to happen in his life, and he still has to deal with the bully at school and his mom's annoying boyfriend. So to me, that's kind of a sort of form of how real life really happens that I wanted to put into fiction.
Mm-hmm. One thing that Felix had to contend with through that ordeal that you described was that he couldn't really tell people that he had this weird alien fused to his DNA.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, he eventually does tell Hector, and Hector, in a sign of love and solidarity, says, I believe you, which is a really touching moment. With respect to your experience when you were young, did you feel you were unable to tell people about what you were feeling with respect to your father?
With respect to my with grief and so on?
Yeah, I mean, Felix couldn't talk about Zix and having an alien. Could you talk about your grief?
That's an interesting question. I don't think I had much to articulate at that time, more than just sort of pain. I think perhaps a more pointed question, if I can be so bold as to answer a different question than the one you asked, is how did I talk or fail to talk about my gender identity when I was a child, because I was raised as a boy and grew up to be a quotes man unquotes impersonating masculinity in the world despite not being a masculine person, because I was born with a male body and everybody said and thought I was a boy, and so I did that. A person could write an English paper about how sort of Zix inside Felix is something like the trans experience, where you have this radically different self inside you, which you do not feel you can express to anyone, I couldn't even express it to myself. I never clearly said as a young trans girl, I am a female person, I'm a girl, this is wrong, this boy thing is just wrong. That was always the case, but I didn't have the language, I didn't have the force of will to go against what my parents and my family and the world all said I was. And I didn't have any role models or figures in fiction. So there is a point, coming back around to why this book is in the world, is there is a hope, I have a hope as a writer, that if some kid out in the world, perhaps living in a family or in a culture or in a town or whatever, which is not really friendly to LGBTQ people, finds this book, and they are sort of in the beginning stages of exploring who they really are as a gendered and sexual person, and it's not matching into the neat binary categories that are being foisted upon them, that they'll find comfort. They'll say, oh, here's a kid who is kind of in-betweeny, and here's another character who's in-betweeny, and maybe it's okay to be in-betweeny. So there is that. There is that also that sense of mission to give hope and solace to young kids coming to terms with identities that don't fit within the binaries.
For 30 years, you were working in public broadcasting.
Yes.
So being here in a studio, not entirely foreign to you.
It's a long time since I've been in a studio as shiny as this one. My last job was 14 years at a community radio station, which is like band stickers all over the walls and you know, records crammed in everywhere, and the messy local community radio model. So this is really nice.
I wouldn't mind some band stickers around here, but I think management would frown upon that.
Yeah, and that's a whole other conversation for another time. But yeah.
So when you were in radio, you were doing interviews, playing music?
In my last job, I was the program director. I mostly trained people to talk on the radio, mm-hmm. Empowering regular humans to be a voice on the airwaves, which is something I believe passionately in, I think.
Being a voice on the airwaves?
Are we really going in this direction? Because I can rant about radio indefinitely.
We've got infinite tape here, I think, and a podcast to support it, so go for it.
Okay. Wow, how far back do I want to go? I started out in public radio in the 80s as a volunteer at KUOW in Seattle, Washington. And this was in the day and age when you could walk into a major market public radio station and hang out and find something fun to do and eventually get on the air. Not the case anymore. Try to walk into KUOW today and say, hey, I'd like to do a radio show. And they might give you information about volunteering during the fundraiser or something. But it was kind of a loose and wild time in public radio. And I loved that. And I got into that for work because I did have in mind that I wanted to be a writer all along through this whole saga. But it just wasn't coming together at that time. And I needed to do something else while the writing percolated. So I got into radio and was announcing classical music. I loved it, and I had jobs at several stations around the country. But I did see how what I have gotten into the habit working in community radio recently of calling mainstream public radio, which is where we are now today, how mainstream public radio became increasingly corporate and sort of safe and polished. And those are good things in some ways, but I thought there were also problems with it. And so I did finally find community radio and was very happy there, empowering people to just make, you know, crazy heavy metal radio mixed with radical social commentary at 3 a.m. kind of radio, and with band stickers all over the place, because to me that's got a certain sort of vital life to it, which, no offense, is lacking from public broadcasting now. Public broadcasting has become big money commodity, and so it is polished and produced within an inch of its life, and has lost a certain something. It's still a huge power for good in the world, but I kind of miss the bad old days.
Well, I'll leave this interview a little rougher than I leave my normal interviews.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
but I did want to ask, so you spent so much time in public broadcasting, you said writing was percolating for you. What prompted you to say, all right, now's the moment I need to just put this radio stuff aside and be a full-time writer?
Well, I got my lucky break. I got representation for Felix and then a contract, and I was able to financially. I was writing all along. I never stopped writing. It was a frustrating process for a long time. I had not yet come out to myself or anyone else as transgender or transitioned. And I think to a certain extent, in my fiction, I was trying to work out those issues unsuccessfully, just sort of banging my head against it. And the stories weren't very good, I think, as they probably tend to be when a person is unsuccessfully attempting to work out some major issue through the act of writing. And so it was only when I finally figured that out and started the process of transitioning that my writing got more free, more joyful, and I wrote a better story.
And when was that?
Within the last 10 years, I sort of had my moment of gender revelation in, what was it, 07? So yeah, coming up on 10 years. And I started writing Felix 5 years ago as a NaNoWriMo, actually.
Really?
Yeah, National Novel Writing Month is this thing where a million people around the world all write 50 words of crappy rough draft in the month of November.
50,000 words.
50,000 words. Yeah. I beg your pardon. Yes, 50,000 words. And that's how Felix was born. I mean, I've had the idea, as I mentioned previously, for decades in different forms, but I finally decided it's time. It's time to write this story about a kid with an alien inside.
So you wrote this first draft in a month and spent 5 years polishing it?
It went through multiple stages. Yes, to answer your question, I wrote the first draft in a month, polished it. Since it takes the form of a 30-day countdown, I got together with my eldest child, who's a talented illustrator, and a friend who does radio drama, and we produced a multimedia real-time serial web fiction of Felix, which unfolded over 30 days at felixis.com, as though he were actually doing the blog for real, with the posts appearing at the right time on the right days of the week, with illustrations and a chapter in radio drama form. It was huge fun to do. A lot of people thought it was cool. Almost nobody actually read the whole thing. So the takeaway from that was long-form fiction doesn't work very well on the internet. you know, 2 minutes, I'm done. And then I rewrote it again and self-published. So it went through a bunch of iterations, and it got better. And then finally, I met the person to whom I'm now engaged to be married, who is a writer also, and who had an agent. And she connected me with the agent, and the agent liked the book. And so I never gave up. I kept writing no matter what, and I kept improving my craft. And when that moment that all writers hope for finally happened, and my words were on the right computer screen in front of the right eyes, somebody said yes. And everything else followed from that. And I was able to leave employment as a radio person and take up writing full time.
And how do you like this life so far, this writing full time life?
I love it. I absolutely adore it. I really feel... This is going to sound pretentious, but whatever. I really feel like the reason I exist on this planet is to make stories for people. I have felt that since I was 5. And it's been incredibly frustrating to not be able to until now, but now I finally get to. I just feel like I get to be who I am. That's what gender revelation and transition was like, too, when I finally figured out, wait a second, I'm just not a man. I might still sound like a man. Changing my voice has been one of the more challenging things, so probably somebody's listening to this right now and thinking, she sounds like a man. Well, I do. I am not, however, a man, a male person. So a kind of sort of tremendous unfolding and unclenching happened with regards to gender, and now the same thing with writing. I get to tell stories, and I get to be that person who makes the books that kids who need help can find. And that just makes me indescribably happy. And what do you do when all your dreams come true? Well, just keep working, I guess. That's my answer. I'm just going to keep writing more books.
Well, Lisa, count me among your fans. Thank you very much for coming in and speaking about your book.
This has been tremendous fun and a very strange flashback, too. Radio flashback.
That's Lisa Bunker. She's the author of the new novel, Felix Is. And you can find a list of the top 5 books on Lisa's bookshelf at our website, nhpr.org. And remember, we're always looking for reading recommendations from listeners like you. So send them our way. Our address is books@nhpr.org. You can also tweet us at nhprbookshelf. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.